University Forum is a presentation of Nebraska Wesleyan University, which brings speakers to the campus to lecture on a variety of topics. The opinions expressed by the speakers do not necessarily represent the opinions of Nebraska Wesleyan University or of this station. Today, University Forum presents Dr. Jean Lanier, Professor of Library Science at East Carolina University and nationally recognized opponent of library censorship, and his lecture, What Do We Do Before the Book Burners Arrive? Lanier, who also serves as Director of Graduate Studies at East Carolina, has been described as one of the nation's most active, dedicated, and outspoken opponents of library censorship. He is a former head of the American Library Association's Intellectual Freedom Roundtable and was profiled in the book Book Banning in America, Who Bans Books, and Why, published in 1990. Lanier earned his bachelor's degree from East Carolina and his master's and doctoral degrees from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm a First Amendment purist, Lanier commented in a 1985 East Carolina publication. I am a fool for those words, for the concept. To me, the words of the First Amendment are absolute. No law abridging the freedom of religion, of speech, or of the press. Join us now for University Forum and Dr. Jean Lanier.
Thank you. Greetings. Good morning. Delighted to be with you folks. I bring you greetings from Tar Heel land. Can't talk a lot of football, but we'll talk basketball after the session if you want to. We Americans pride ourselves, I think, on being, in the words of our national anthem, the land of the free and the home of the brave, but recent events force us to ask the question, for how long? Have you thought about the possibility as new events occur almost daily around the world, that some of these nations now involved in political changes may very well be able to go about the business of democracy better than we? Isn't it great we live in a country where we have a choice? Friends of libraries, and I assume you are, regardless of the size of the library, involves many responsibilities and relationships, and I hope that all of you feel that you have an obligation to work for the betterment of our libraries and its service to the public, because it's one of the last outposts in this country where you can go to get all points of view and access to information. It's a public trust. I suppose we don't take all of the opportunities to talk about our libraries very much. If you stop 20 people on the street and you say, golly, my child just got bit by a wasp. To whom do I turn? Who thinks of the library first? Very few, I would think. I know this is an off-the-wall suggestion, but the underpinning of these freedoms I'm talking about is the First Amendment, whose rights reach far beyond those involving the press. The target now is not just speech in its usual sense, but also the right to take actions that serve as expressions for or against one cause or another. Justice William Brennan Jr. put it right, I think, when he said, if there's a bedrock principle underlying the First Amendment, it's that the government may not prohibit the expression of an idea simply because society finds the idea itself offensive or disagreeable. End of quote. In the 15th century, Columbus sailed west to find a shorter route to the Far East, and he encountered a world unknown to the Europeans populated by different civilizations. These early explorers came to the New World to find land, gold, and other riches, but later they came to escape religious, economic, and political oppression, and out of this turbulent mixture arose the U.S. Constitution, with its emphasis on individual rights and freedoms. And 1 years later, the ideals, the traditions, and beliefs of the founding European fathers continue to dominate America. It's a land with unprecedented freedoms that serve as a model for others longing for these freedoms. But unfortunately, it's also a land of the old sins, intolerance, and prejudice, which manifest themselves in our society as censorship and discrimination, to name a couple. The future may introduce new sources of tyranny, and I'm a positive thinker. As information becomes more digitized, access to it becomes dependent on special equipment and skills. And those without the correct equipment and the expertise will become a new class of disadvantage and thus become victims of our information-dependent society. Soon biased attitudes toward the information poor may be comparable to those faced by ethnic minorities in the past and today. The Clinton administration says it's placing a national information policy and communications infrastructure high on its agenda. But while an information highway will deliver a rich supply of information to the public through telephones, television, and computers, critics question the effect of this converging technology on privacy, on free expression, and democracy itself. It's important to ensure the America's public's birthright, which is equal access to information. Now, there have been many attempts to limit access to information by individuals and groups in our midst. I recently served as a consultant to a new series on PBS called Ghostwriter by the Children's Television Workshop. Have you seen this by any chance? They asked me to review the first few episodes to help them identify red flags which might cause them problems. Can you imagine that we have to do this sort of thing in today's world? A group in Congress attempted to cut funding for public broadcasting because some people felt that their view was too liberal. Another free speech issue that no doubt will find its way into the courts is that of North Carolina's refusal to permit the Ku Klux Klan to join the Adopt-a-Highway program. I've spent a good many years watching the Klan, and with some few exceptions, its members are ignorant, bigoted, and altogether, as my grandfather used to say, as trustworthy as a suck-egg dog. Whatever. But that's not the point. The state, in its corporate wisdom, has permitted groups, religious, civic, and otherwise, to assume responsibility for cleaning up the shoulders of our highways. And there's no good constitutional or statutory reason why the Kluxes shouldn't be a welcome among those thousand points of light. Even if it means that their name will be adorned one of those little promotional signs along the roadside. You see, in a democracy, it's necessary to stand excesses in order to get the whole package. You see, freedom of speech belongs to the unwashed as well as the washed. And once an excuse is found to deny it to one American, it'll only be a matter of time until it's denied to all. In 1992, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit issued its decision in the Kramer versus Morristown case. This involved a case brought by a homeless man up in New Jersey against the public library. The court ruled that libraries are designated limited public forums, not like a public park or sidewalk, and the library does have the right to make reasonable rules and regulations to facilitate access to information for all people. The court said that there is a First Amendment right to receive information, which should not be restricted. Mr. Kramer, by the way, is currently wants to be a gubernatorial candidate, I understand, in New Jersey. As you can see, the free speech scoffers are to be found on both sides of the political spectrum, and each of us has a distinct challenge to respond to efforts which threaten to undermine the personal freedoms that have been ours in the past. Recent statistics indicate of those challenges reported, and only a small portion are reported, most go unreported, 20%, over 20%, were instigated by right-wing political organizations, and they also inspired around another 18%. Their complaints ranged from New Age to Satanism to sex education to self-esteem programs, adding up to about 40% of our challenges which were reported. Around 7% were left-wing challenges. And that's what I mean by it comes from both ends of the political spectrum. They challenge such titles as Tom Sawyer, Little House on the Prairie, Of Mice and Men, Tarzan of the Apes, saying that they promoted racism and so forth. Last September, the University of Virginia's Thomas Jefferson Center for the Protection of Free Expression announced the results of a new poll which revealed, among other things, that nearly one-third of all Americans believe that protection of free speech under the Constitution should not include the arts and the media. Now, to me, this is distressing. Do you want the government to tell you what view you can express, what book to read, what video to watch, or how to vote? Well, our generation has been off of the dreadful burden of choice. In the marketplace of ideas, we stand both united and divided. Caste and class, pride and prejudice, intolerance and bigotry, these are our bonds and our chains. And as you've heard all your life, what is free speech or free choice to one is oppression to another. Our knowledge tends to separate us as well as unite us. I guess I'm what you might call a First Amendment purist. I didn't adopt this philosophy overnight. It took many years of thought and mind searching. A number of years ago, I served as a counterintelligence agent in Western Europe, and I talked with people who remembered or had heard stories related about Hitler's Germany and the book burnings, and it occurred to me at that time how simple it is for something similar to happen anywhere. It's very possible in a nation where human rights are taken for granted. This can be expected in a society where our citizens tend to be apathetic and seem to be willing to leave decisions which affect their lives up to someone else. This can be expected in a nation where few people go to the polls, even in national elections. Unfortunately, the majority of our citizens are not aware of most public issues, nor are they concerned about them. But I personally love being associated with the First Amendment, the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence. As a librarian, as an educator, as a taxpayer, as a parent, what else am I? As a good Episcopalian, I treasure the words in these documents. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. They are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. That among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Terrific words, precise, impeccable, I love them. In the First Amendment itself, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of people peacefully to assemble. I'm a fool for these words. I'm a fool for the concept. To me, the words of the First Amendment are absolute and should never be changed. Congress shall make no law, it says. It doesn't say there'll be freedom of expression provided said expressions do not run contrary to popular thought. It doesn't say there'll be freedom of expression provided they have no tendency to subvert maybe some of our standing institutions. Remember what I said earlier about having to stand excesses in order to have the whole package in a democracy. Librarians in this country attempt to ensure this free flow of information. They operate under what is known as the Library Bill of Rights to provide materials for the interests, the information, and enlightenment of all people of the community the library serves. Materials are not excluded due to their origin, their background, or their views. They are supposed to present all points of view on current and historical issues. When it comes to manners, it's up to the parent to guide his or her children in their reading, viewing, and listening habits. They should, however, confine this guidance to their own children and not attempt to tell the children of other people what to do. As a nation, we sometimes feel we're confronted with insoluble problems, and we often feel helpless and unrepresented. And while we're in this frame of mind, there are individuals and groups in our midst who have arisen with what they say are all the answers to these problems. And they're doing this in a number of ways. In the name of God, the family unit, fear of the occult, the flag, patriotism. And because we feel lost, many of our citizens are turning to these philosophies in the hope of finding some stability in life with all its trials. But in the process, we're giving up many of the basic freedoms, such as the freedom to read, view, and listen. Many of our citizens, including people just like you, do not realize that by keeping silent when the censors make a visit, they're giving up many of these freedoms. The publication several years ago of Rushdie's book, Satanic Verses, showed us that through death threats and intimidation, a foreign ruler thousands of miles away prevented the sale of the book in three of our largest book chains in this country. They later changed their minds, but their first reaction to this was very distressing. The book in this case was not the issue. In fact, if you've attempted to read this book, you already know you'd never have to buy Simonex again. At least that was my experience. Mr. Rushdie came out from undercover just this past week saying he's getting tired of this business. Can't you imagine? Attacks on ideas, on public education, on library materials have been on the rise for several years. But intellectual freedom became a priority with me, and I made a professional commitment to take on these attempted censors. I realized that politicians and other governing boards were beginning to listen to the people who screamed the loudest. Therefore, I decided that someone needed to screen the other point of view, and this is exactly what I've done in my state and a number of other states, to professional groups, state legislatures, civic groups, and to librarians and their trustees. But as I've traveled to speak from Maine to Florida to Pennsylvania to Minnesota to Arizona to Colorado to New Mexico, I quickly found that North Carolina was not an isolated case. Since our senior senator, Jesse Hams, feels that our state needs to clean up for the world, I thought North Carolina was probably having the most challenges of all. Since 1980, I've chaired the Intellectual Freedom Committee in our state and on similar committees in the American Library Association and the Southeastern Library Association. And I learned very quickly that the problem was not nationwide. It's not rural and nor urban. It's not southern nor western. It's across the country. But in my travels, do you know what I found? Although there are individuals and groups out there who would limit our freedom to read, in many situations, like Pogo, I gazed upon the enemy and discovered it was us. To my surprise and disappointment, I discovered too often that we're the ideal men and women who conceive of everything and do little or nothing about it. We're the noble species who claim rights without responsibility, authority without liability, leadership without apprenticeship, and victory without bloodshed. Doesn't that sound professorial? Our banner is often emblazoned with that heroic intellectual motto, "Lest you and them fight." When I was testifying in challenge hearings in different communities and in the state legislature and in Congress, I looked around and wondered where all those supporters of the freedom to read were. Where are all those people who casually say, "Sure, I believe in the First Amendment, the Library Bill of Rights"? My comments may seem terribly harsh, but I don't think they really are. Most of my harshness can be attributed to my utter and complete exasperation with people so preoccupied with the life of the mind that he or she ignores the fact that the great things that have gone on in this country have been by forces who have coupled the mind and the deed. Too many librarians, too many students, too many of the general public are sitting back and letting these things happen without doing anything in opposition. Sometimes this is due to intimidation, fear, lack of commitment, a pure apathy. But I'm afraid some of our basic freedoms are being usurped by some of these individuals and groups. It's important we put apathy behind us and join in the fight to protect the freedom to read, to protect public education and the free flow of information. These attempts at censorship have been initiated by a variety of sources: parents, teachers, school officials, members of city or county boards, civic groups, publishers, librarians, organized pressure groups, church-related groups. It's difficult for many people to see that librarians do not select materials at random. They select these materials based on written approved criteria, which are found in the selection policy, which has been approved by their governing boards, and based on reviews in professional journals. The criteria for selection include such things as reputation of the author, readability, relevancy, price, demand by library users, format. And these policies also include procedures for handling complaints, because librarians believe in due process as much as they do intellectual freedom. Anyone has a perfect right to file a complaint about the holdings of our libraries. The reconsideration or the complaint form that goes before a committee who determines if the challenged material meets the adopted criteria is the way it works. If it does not, the title is removed and the complainant is so informed and thanked. This often happens since mistakes are made. In other cases, they may recommend retaining the title in the collection since they feel it meets the selection criteria. If the complainant does not agree with the decision, then they can appeal on up to the governing board. Because of these adopted criteria, librarians do not have to defend everything. They only need to support those titles which meets the criteria in the adopted selection policy. As I said earlier, the concepts of freedom of speech and freedom of the press are continually challenged by individuals and groups attempting to restrict what others can read or view. A neglectful mother, witchcraft, sex, Halloween, a negative view of life, a sad ending. These are some of the reasons which have been used this past year to challenge or ban books in libraries. Four children's books were questioned because the books, according to them, altered the story of Noah's Ark, which made it confusing to children. A book of riddles, Laugh Lines, was removed from an elementary school because it demeans those who can't figure out the answer. Come on. The picture book, Ida and the World Smugglers, was challenged because the mother in the story was considered neglectful. I personally feel that many of these attempts at censorship belie the insecurities of some of these groups and individuals who would limit the freedom to learn. You see, a book is easier to burn than to explain. Some of these people do not give our citizens, and particularly our young people, very much credit. They do not respect the idea that young people have minds of their own and should be aware of the different points of view of what is going on in our world. This way they can think through and deal with problems rather than being told what to do. With parental guidance, they can make up their own minds about issues. How can our young people deal with day-by-day problems and issues in the real world without knowing the means by which to accomplish this, or even that these problems exist? In the last couple of years in North Carolina, and this is true in many other states, complaint forms have been filed for such titles as, here goes your bestseller list, Brave New World, Grapes of Wrath, The Catch and the Rye, of Mice and Men, A Star is Born, and every title Judy Blume has ever written. I recently saw her, and I said, you threw us off on wife in there. Don't you ever do that again. And she said, well, you find out the subject of the new book that I'm working on right now. I said, Judy, Judy, Judy. Here we go again. Others' complaints. Robin Hood, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Lord of the Flies. The R Volume of World book due to its sectional reproduction. The Living Bible because it was too modern. The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, The Voyages of Dr. Doolittle, and Little Red Riding Hood due to the violence. The Wolf Eating Up Grandmother. And they said, do you know what she had in her little basket taken to grandmother's house? Wine and cheese. They said, get that book out of there. Others were Witches of Eastwick, The Birth of a Nation, How the Leopard Got His Spots, The Cabbage Patch Kids, Jack and the Bean Tree, The Little Mermaid, The Chocolate War, Scary Stories, The Dooku Outlaw Jelly Beans, The Color Purple, Bridge to Terabithia, Annie on My Mind, The Great Gilly Hopkins. The list goes on and on. The most frequently challenged books across the country this past year were Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, The Bridge to Terabithia, Catching the Rye, The Boy Who Lost His Face, Of Mice and Men, and Halloween ABC. They're pretty constant. They're up there all the time. In fact, in my state alone, over the last 3 years, we've dealt with over 200 challenges to materials in libraries. I quote these titles, as I say, not to give you a bestseller list, which often happens when a book or video is banned, but to let you see there's no rhyme or reason in predicting what might be next. I found that censorship activity is not confined to any geographic area, nor is it limited to either end of the political spectrum, as I said. The urge to censor today, as in the past, affects every one of us. Although a large percentage of reported incidents appears to have been initiated by an isolated individual, the reasons cited for these attempts constantly follow the philosophy of some of our nationally organized pressure groups. The educational philosophy is quite succinct. I've been on platforms with a number of them, and it goes something like this. I'm paraphrasing, you understand. Children should be exposed to a slanted set of facts that in no way conflicts with my point of view of history or my vision of the future. A number of these groups have been quite vocal and instrumental in having materials removed from our libraries and our classrooms. They have made their impact in a number of states. As an example, the Reverend Jerry Falwell, founder of the Moral Majority and later the Liberty Federation, has not mellowed, I've discovered this past year. I happened upon one of his sermons the other night on cable, and he's decided to again turn up the sanctimony a notch and get both mad and even. He has a perfect right to do this, but some of the things he said made me wonder if hate and vindictiveness have now become family values. His sermon was devoted to the most amazing offensive charge against anyone he perceived as his enemy. I kept listening for some traditional church message, but he spent most of the time lambasting the Clinton administration, liberals, and feminists. He made it clear that anyone who questioned his views was a non-believer, gay or lesbian, a New Ager, or God hater. And as an aside, for gifts up to $30, you can receive tapes and literature, such as a video of gay activities held during the Clinton inaugural. He said this was the change that Clinton was talking about during his campaign. I still have trouble finding this philosophy between Genesis and Revelation. Phyllis Schlafly, director of the Eagle Forum with a membership of 75,000, continues to visit many states, including North Carolina. Her stand is that libraries are full of materials which promote New Age. Ms. Schlafly said, and I quote, I was there, among the things children are learning in school are how to commit suicide, how to use illegal drugs, how to engage in premarital and promiscuous sex, and how to lie, cheat, steal, and spy on their parents, end of quote. Have you been in the schools lately? Is that the curriculum? Mel and Norma Gable out of Texas were recently in North Carolina again conducting a workshop on how to select textbooks. They oppose books which provide students with open-ended questions, any with sex education, those which depict women in non-traditional roles, and books which they say devote too much space to such topics as the Vietnam War, Watergate, poverty, and slavery. Like these things never happen. Mel Gable said, and I quote, I want you mathematicians to listen, when a student reads in a math book that there are no absolutes, suddenly every value he's been taught is destroyed, and the next thing you know, he turns to crime and drugs. This is a direct quote. Don Wildman of the American Family Association and Robert Sammons and his organization called Citizens for Excellence in Education are working hard to seat members of his group on local school boards in order to capture majorities. He said it this way. This would allow us to determine all local policy, select good textbooks, good curriculum. Our time has come. End of quote. Executive Director Raph Reed of the Christian Coalition, along with the Reverend Pat Robinson, have been extremely vocal, pushing their agendas. They indicated that by having Clinton in the White House, it will be much easier for them to rally their grassroots army of activists and contributors, and then they will be ready to fight the war. And this has become a reality. Reed said, and I quote, we've learned how to move under radar in the cover of the night with shrubbery strapped to our helmets. They have boasted that soon they'll have their members in all elected and appointed posts and will be running our schools, our city councils, our state houses, Congress, and the nation. I'm not an alarmist, but listen to what I'm saying. The Reverend Pat Robinson said, women's equality is about a socialist anti-family movement that encourages women to leave their husbands, kill their children, practice witchcraft, destroy capitalism, and become lesbians, end of quote. This is certainly not the philosophy they preach in my church. How about yours? All of these movements are having their influence on banning certain materials in our libraries. In fact, for those reported this past year, the census succeeded in removing titles in 41% of the cases. Many of these groups combine politics and religion, as you can see. Their social spirituality crusading has become a political agenda, seeking to regulate personal freedom and public policy to its own standards, regardless of the opinions and the rights of others. They attack their opponents by directly or indirectly implying that they are un-American, non-Christian, or at best misguided fools, while at all times claiming the high ground of the righteousness of their position. I recently made a presentation in Fayetteville, North Carolina, and I was accused that evening of being a communist, inflammatory. The adjectives went on and on and on. These are some of these groups talking, and as I said from the beginning, they have a perfect right to do this. In a nationwide push for power at the state and local levels, candidates from these groups won hundreds of races on election day, establishing themselves as a grassroots political force and giving them a base from which to push for control. Where in the past they've had a national agenda, now they're working at the grassroots level and have been very successful. They made tremendous victories at the school board and state legislative levels, electing what has been predicted as 40% of their candidates. They've turned their focus, as I say, from national to local politics. Well, I hope by this time you feel you have a role to play in all this in protecting our freedom to read, view, and listen. Every library needs a pool of individuals to whom they can turn to help them vocalize their stand on intellectual freedom, the right of an individual to choose. I hope you support your library staff, their selection policy. As friends of your library, you should know exactly where you stand on issues. I've been involved in many situations where people were not really sure on their stand, and their defense fell apart due to inconsistencies. As I said earlier, everyone thinks they believe in the freedom to read until the problem comes home, and then they start to hedge or make exceptions. I'm sure you've heard the allegory of life in Nazi Germany. It's been used in every context, but it's perfect here. When they came and took away the communists, I was unconcerned because I was not a communist. They came for the Jews, but this didn't bother me. They came for the union leaders, but I was not a union leader, so I was not concerned. Next, they took the farmer and the merchant, but I hardly noticed. Then they came to get the intellectual, the scholar, and I cried, "Stop!" But I looked around, and there was no one left to hear me in my plea for help. This parallel can be drawn with our library collections once the census foot in the door. Who will be next in line should the first censor be successful in his effort to remove or limit access to books or videos or other materials which meet the criteria for selection? I hope we'll not force our young people to speak as John Powell writes in his poem, "Thank You." It goes like this. "Thank you for burning that book. I was beginning to think no one had read it. It's a dirty book. It bothered me when I was a boy. And now that I'm a man, it bothers me more than ever. It's about people who feel lost and are trying to make some sense out of life, who are trying to learn how to live and are angry about having to die and all that other dirty stuff. Thank you for burning it. You've made my life a lot easier. Now I know who to call next time I feel lost and can't make sense of my life and need to hear about love and am angry about having to die. Thank you for burning that dirty book, but thanks a lot more for assuming responsibility for the future. I was starting to wonder, starting to worry that maybe we'd have to do it for ourselves." Isn't that a sad commentary on life and the education some of these groups are prescribing for our young people? Walter Cronkite, honoring Barbara Jordan, who received People for the American Way's Spirit of Liberty Award last year, offered stirring words to urge continued protection of our constitutional liberties. He said, "We've got to shout these truths in which we believe from the rooftops to the streets. And I bet we'll find that more windows are thrown open to join the chorus than we ever dreamed possible." I hope he was right. Well, as you can see, I like living in a country where I can speak out. I like the First Amendment. I like diverse ideas. I believe in a supreme being. I like the flag, but it's time we take back the flag because it's my flag too, from those people that have been wrapping themselves in it and banning books in the name of God and country. Yes, the flag flies with the rocket's red glare and the bombs bursting in the air, but it also flies of our legislatures, our universities, our schools, and our courts. And it's critical that Americans, and especially university students, and their friends recognize that our country is unique in the world, including the holdings of our libraries. Having recently celebrated the birthday of the Bill of Rights, we can no longer take our basic freedoms for granted and gradually allow individuals and groups to limit our access to information and knowledge. Don't ever vote for a constitutional convention. If that comes around, they're going to mess it up. We have to put aside our apathy and take part in the democratic process and vocalize our feelings to our governments at every level. Were you at your last precinct meeting? Those people I just identified, were they getting their people elected, which they have a perfect right to do? But we're being unrepresented by not attending ourselves. We have to acknowledge we have complex problems, but realize that the simplistic solutions offered by some of these groups may be misleading and wrong. We also have to acknowledge that ambiguities abound not only within the positions of those with whom we disagree, but within our own positions as well. So I'm here today to say, let's cut the lunacy with the bottom line and get on with it. Are there fewer people out there that are with me? I hope so. Thank you for your kind attention.
Today's guest on University Forum has been Dr. Gene Lanier, professor of library science at East Carolina University and nationally recognized opponent of library censorship. His lecture was entitled, "What Do We Do Before the Book Burners Arrive?" This has been University Forum, a presentation of Nebraska Wesleyan University. Nebraska Wesleyan is an independent, coeducational, undergraduate liberal arts institution, nationally recognized for excellence in teaching and the high caliber of its students and faculty. Approximately 1,400 full-time students are enrolled in more than 40 major programs.